Vintage Rolex. Belongs to someone I used to work with.
Is that the whole story, Clint?
They've been out of the game a long time, but their identity's still attached to that one.
Probably not.
Identity's still attached. Find out about
it. It would blow their cover. Goodbye, friend.
They just in a
random
home?
Is undercover that Clint is trying to protect? I see one.
Hey, there you are. There you are, my friend. There you are, my friend.
Surprise, surprise.
Oh, my God. You ain't gonna do it. You ain't
She's
gonna do
not
it. She was in
taking
a
the shot.
Disney movie.
What?
Oh, why would you leave?
What? What?
Weren't you here to do something? But that's cool. It's Yelena. All right. But why did you leave?
Welcome back to New Rockstars. This week's episode of Hawkeye only left us with more questions and a hankering for snickerdoodles. But what, besides Jack's involvement with the tracksuits, is Eleanor hiding? How is Clint going to convince Natasha's super spy sister that he's not at fault for her death in time for the holidays? But most importantly, who does that watch belong to? Why is Hawkeye protecting them? Why can Laura Barton speak German? What the
fuck?
This is Inside Marvel, our after show for Marvel's Hawkeye on Disney Plus. We just watched episode 4. I'm Eric Voss. I'm here with MT. Thoughts, MT?
Dude, we got Yelena. She was rumored or like confirmed for the show for a while. We were wondering where she was, and there she is, wearing her Splinter Cell gear and everything. I'm so excited.
That's right. Yes, we got Yelena. We did not get answers, though. But that's why this after show exists, so that we can just kind of reach toward answers and throw out a bunch of different options, that most of which probably won't be the case. But we're here all together working through this show, looking ahead to these next final two episodes, which I think the series is starting to take shape. Like, pieces are falling into place.
Yes, yes, of course.
All right, so Partners Am I Right begins with Jack and Clint. From what we can tell, no discernible history between them, unless they're, like, hiding something.
That would be weird. It's like, we're just not talking to each other, but we'll just pretend like we don't know each other. That'd be weird.
Jack just seemed like the happiest, living his best life, sipping.
I love this character. He just seems like he's just here for the ride. He's like, I'm just here to have fun and collect swords. I love it.
Here to make friends. But they're able to talk their way out of Eleanor's suspicion, and then Clint snatches back that Ronin sword and he tells Eleanor that he will not back down, but he'll keep Kate safe. And Eleanor's like, okay, great, I'm gonna put a hit.
It's like, all right, I'm just gonna have to kill you now, but at least my daughter won't be around probably.
One of the more interesting moments was when Laura alerts Clint that Jack Duquesne is the CEO of Sloan Limited and that he is funneling money to someone that he just called the big guy. So it still sounds like there's someone above Jack Duquesne. But we'll see exactly how that comes together. And then Laura asks in German about the Avengers compound watch. What did the kids think was happening in that moment when she started speaking German? Like, oh, mom's on the phone with her alt-right friends again. Well, Kate celebrates the holidays with Clint. One of the more endearing moments of the episode. You know, when they learn how to flick coins to kill people and almost hurt the pizza dog. Ah, we must protect this dog.
My favorite Christmas activity.
And then Kate deduces, as we suspected that she would, that Clint is indeed the Ronin. Meanwhile, Laura is tracking the watch to a residence that we later find out is the home of Maya Lopez. Right. Kate finds a list of Clint's family there, suggesting that Maya may have gotten that information from the watch somehow, or that Maya and Yelena may be working together. But then it turns into this big rooftop brawl. This super secret assassin with her night vision goggles, with her very super ineffective widow's bite, is Yelena Belova. Why did the widow's bite just, like, Maya Lopez was able to just kind of pull it off. Clint was like, ah, my neck. All right, fine. They were not supposed to paralyze you. We've seen the widow's bite work before or knock people on their asses and they did not get back up.
I feel like it probably has to do with them probably being exposed to the widow's bite before. And just being used to it.
They have a resistance to electricity?
Well, like, maybe not electricity, but, like, you know how some people can, like, you know, resist tasers? I just feel like if you're used to the sensation, then you just know, like, all right, if I just pull this off, then, like, it'll stop, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, my God. I mean, my thinking is that it's you know, Avengers souped up Widow's Bite versus Red Room tech, and the Red Room tech just doesn't have the same kind of effectiveness that an Avengers version of it does. I don't know. But we're going to discuss why Yelena was brought into this. But first, who does that watch belong to? Could it be that we don't know everything about Laura Barton? MT and I are going to break down the evidence, give you our theories about the possible owner of that Rolex, and what that tells us about where the MCU is going next. I have a couple thoughts on that. First, our merch partners at the Epic Heroes Shop have a new Latest Obsession shirt inspired by Hawkeye. You can get it at newrockstarsmerch.com. It's a limited edition shirt that you can get in black, white, or, of course, purple. And when you get this shirt, you'll get the added option to write in a custom shout out that will appear at the bottom of these Hawkeye after shows. Stacy says, prediction, Jack is pursuing Eleanor because she killed Derek. He wants to push Kate away to protect her. That's an interesting thought. I mean, who knows? Jack might actually be a good guy in this show.
He's a double switcheroo.
He could just be a nice guy swordsman who is working for the government. Maybe he's just investigating this criminal. He's going to be like Mr. Green and Clue, and all the FBI is going to come swarming in. Yes. Let's see. Zachary says, the Black Widow, Yelena, in credits scene, if Echo is a former Black Widow, could she be the one to help Clint? This is something that you theorized about, MT, that Echo, Maya Lopez, could be a former Black Widow agent.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would be the case based off what we learned about Echo in episode 3, though.
Yeah, exactly. Like, now that we know more about Echo's past, we know, like, where she got her, you know, fighting ability. I don't think she's part of the Red Room anymore. She's just a girl that just knows how to kick ass. So,
yeah, we don't really know what was going on in her adolescent age between being a little kid.
This is true.
Michael asks, so what are the chances of Eleanor actually being Madame Mask? I think pretty good. Or just what the purpose that Madame Mask served in the comics, I think Eleanor could serve this purpose on the show. I don't know if they're going to call her Madame Mask per se, but I think the chances are more likely than not.
I just feel like her character is like kind of wearing a mask in itself because she's always being fake. I just feel like she's a fake person at all times. So like, I just feel like they might be setting it up that way. Slowly, with her personality, but who knows? I don't know. Maybe it could happen.
All right, MT, what's our leading question coming out of this episode?
Well, Eric, we gotta ask, who the hawk does the watch belong to? Because everyone's talking about it. I guess it's like a transmitter of some sort. What's going on here?
It's got a transmitter in it. Well, I think the answer is simply Clint's wife, Laura Barton, and Linda Cardellini will soon be revealed as ex-SHIELD operative codenamed Mockingbird. Good night, everyone. Bye-bye. It's the end
of this episode. That would be nuts.
I like to give those short answer options just to give people a chance to click away. Don't click away. We need that watch time. Let's look at what happened this episode. So Laura Barton is, to me, the most interesting character to come out of this episode. She's revealed to be multilingual. She can speak German and has this kind of like pig Latin that she uses it for with Clint. Clint just responds in English. So what was the point? Like, the kids know something is up when mom starts speaking German. Right. And I think it's more interesting, this new element to the relationship between her and Clint, that not only is she just his partner, she's not just, you know, the mother of his kids and his wife and his spouse, that she's also like his espionage research partner that he tells her to look up Sloan Limited. And she basically gets all the answers about it. You know, she's not just the person in the chair. She finds out everything you could possibly know.
Right. I don't know what Google.com she's using, but let me know what that is, because that's got a lot of information.
She was able to find out that Jack Duquesne is ahead of it. She basically turned someone in that operation from her living room during Christmas time. Damn. Was able to get someone in the tracksuit organization to flip and spill the beans about Jack Duquesne, which is a huge secret that they're trying to keep from Kate.
Investigating. Moms know how to multitask.
And like in episode 2, there was that, you know, way that when Clint was in the locker room, she's like, oh, catch and release. That was an old Natasha Romanoff move. It just seems like now we're seeing that Laura and Clint and Natasha kind of were equals as espionage figures. And that's why Laura had this respect for Clint and Natasha and never worried that there was any kind of romantic chemistry between them. And the reason why Natasha respected Laura and Clint, you know, it's just kind of a new, interesting way to see what they were all capable of and why they really connected with each other. She also knew a lot about this watch. Like, she was really worried. She's more worried than Clint is about this watch getting out. Like, she knows that it exists, right? Yeah. Like, she knows the inventory of Avengers Compound, which before the show is never something we would have thought Laura Barton ever would really care about. Yeah. Now, she says in German, anything else go missing from the compound? Clint goes, you mean the Rolex? She goes, no, I don't think so. Wasn't it destroyed years ago? And she's like, well, I thought so, but, you know, I thought the same thing about your fancy outfit. And he's like, I'll check the signal from the transmitter. And then she later tracks it down to what is Maya Lopez's outfit. And then he says, as we saw in the opening clip, it belongs to someone I used to work with. They've been out of the game for a long time. Their identity is still attached to that watch. And he says, it could blow their cover. Goodbye, friend. Now, I think the fact that she can speak German might tell us something, MT, because we know of the Berlin-based Joint Counterterrorism Center building. That's where, in Civil War, Sharon Carter for SHIELD worked there. Everett Ross of the CIA worked there. It's kind of where a bunch of different government agencies, not just United States government agencies, but Interpol, every spy agency in the world kind of works together here to restrain and to investigate criminals. Yeah. But the last time we saw this place was in Spider-Man Far From Home, where Nick Fury and Maria Hill were there. But also, that was not Nick Fury and Maria Hill. Those were Skrulls. So I see two possibilities. If they are building something up with Laura Barton, with Linda Cardellini's character, I think she could be a former SHIELD operative codenamed Mockingbird. Now, this would possibly be a retcon for Bobby Morse. Mockingbird has been the longtime romantic companion to Hawkeye in the comics. But I actually think they're going to, if they do this, make Mockingbird kind of a title like Black Widow is and like we're going to see Hawkeye is, something that can be passed down. And that maybe Laura Barton was the previous generation of the Mockingbird. She retired when she met Clint and wanted to start a family. So that was passed down to another Mockingbird, Bobby Morse. And then so that could explain Natasha and Clint's friendship with her. But more of a reach theory, and I'll admit this is a reach, but you just got to think, like, if they're talking about secret identities and they don't want it to get out there and Clint is like, goodbye, friend, what kind of friend could he have that we still don't know about in the MCU that this show seems to be setting up? Well, what are the big titles in 2022? We have Moon Knight, we have She-Hulk, we have Ms. Marvel, and we have Secret Invasion. Doesn't this kind of sound like anytime you pitch Skrull as the possible answer to the question, it always sounds stupid, right? Because you're like, really? It's just a green person? Until you see it. Until the WandaVision post-credits scene, until the Far From Home post-credits scene, and suddenly it makes sense. Like, I'm not saying Laura Barton is herself a Skrull. She could still just be an ex-SHIELD operative, but she could be someone who is, the way Nick Fury has been, protecting Skrulls hidden in plain sight on Earth. Like, she could be the link to it. It kind of seems like somewhere on this watch might be a sort of, like, data chip or something like that. That almost like the CIA asset list, right? In this case, it might be the Skrull asset list and all the Skrulls that are hidden in different government agencies, in different corners of society. And that's why it's so important that this watch doesn't get out in the world. Yeah, I admit Skrulls is a huge reach and it feels stupid.
I don't think so, man. I don't, because like I was actually going to guess Skrulls myself because like it, you're right. I feel like, you know, back in the day, like if it was a year ago or the year previous, saying Skrulls, because like we know that Secret Invasion was so far off, it'd be like, all right, it's not Skrulls because hey, we're not at Skrulls yet. But like now that Secret Invasion is so close, like you said, I feel like it's not as much of a reach as we become more and more, you know, closer to Secret Invasion. So I think that this watch could be some type of alien communication, like maybe with Talos, because Talos is, you know, walking around doing his thing. And so I wouldn't be surprised during the course of Clint's secret agenting, he meets his wife, and his wife is like, listen, man, I'm a Skrull, and this is just who I am, but I love you, and I want to be with you, and I want to be here, and so maybe Clint just knows that he married a Skrull, and he's just cool with it. He's like, you are who you are, and it's whatever, and we gotta have half Skrull, half human children, and it's fine.
Yeah. I think when we're, you know, looking ahead to something like Secret Invasion, we're going to start doing this a lot, looking at everyone in the MCU on who could actually be a Skrull, right?
Absolutely.
I think, as in the comics, they're going to more likely reveal as, oh, this person was a Skrull the whole time, the periphery characters. We might get one or two huge characters like Rhodey or something
Maria
like that.
Hill or
but
something,
I think everyone else is going to, it's going to be someone's partner. It's going to be someone's supporting character, you know, Ned or something. It's going to be that type of tier. I'm not saying Ned.
Imagine if Ned was a Skrull. That'd be so funny. I would love that.
Wild. So people like Laura Barton are the kind of suspects you want to keep your eye on in terms of, are they Skrulls? But I think also, like, you don't have to be a Skrull in disguise to be suspicious in the way that Nick Fury and Maria Hill were not Skrulls the whole time. They just had this relationship where they traded off with Skrulls, whereas they were off on other missions. Sorin and Talos replaced them on Earth to do other things so that they can multitask and be in multiple places at one time. I just think, as the show like Secret Invasion is not a show about aliens. It's not a story about alien invaders. It's a story about espionage. It's a story about distrust of your neighbor. And that's what makes it such a cool storyline, that component of who do you trust.
For sure.
So that seems to be the theme that is being set up with the questions around this watch. There is someone who is still undercover. In a world where everyone is spies, everyone is in deep cover, what kind of deep cover is Clint Barton worried about getting out there beyond that, if it's not the fact that there are millions of Skrulls hidden in Earth society? It's just kind of hard right now to look ahead and point to any one answer of what this show is leading to in the final two episodes. Because coming out of episode three, it was like, okay, we're going to see more and more clues for Kingpin, right? This is going to be a Kingpin show. That's going to be the Agatha all along. That's going to be the He Who Remains revealed late in the show. But in addition to a couple more clues pointing to Kingpin, we're getting Yelena Belova and Val in this show now. It seems like Val was the person who Eleanor called to put that hit on Clint. We'll talk about how Val and Yelena got involved in this more later this episode. But we're also getting this hint to whatever is going on with the owner of that watch, and I don't think it has anything to do with either Kingpin or Val. It seems like it's a third, completely different vector that this show is firing an arrow out on. So it's just kind of, it makes the show a bit, at this point in the game, a little unclear what the next step is.
Since, like, this whole mystery of the watch and, like, who belongs to it, yeah, we're definitely at a place of, like, it could be anyone, essentially. It could be literally any big Marvel gang leader, essentially.
I'm now at a point where I'm not wondering what Marvel character would appreciate a Rolex watch, and more thinking of practically in the story, what secret covert characters are out there who need their secrecy protected still. That seems to be functionally the point of this watch.
This
now, I don't understand how you hide something on a Rolex watch, and why would you put that on a Rolex watch? It tells me that there's some kind of story to it, you know? But like, a Rolex is like a flashy piece of jewelry that might just get stolen by any mugger on the street. Why wouldn't you hide it in something more discreet? Like, it's like if you're hiding certain video files on your computer desktop, do you put it in cool videos folder? No, you put it in a tax forms folder, and you put that folder with another folder, and that folder with another folder.
Amateurs,
right?
That's so
physically
funny.
Where on a Rolex do you hide a chip? Do you just like tape it to the bottom of the Rolex and just like a little micro SD card? I'm just thinking, what happened? Did they get like a pair of tweezers to extract this?
Every day at 4:20, the chip pops out.
Yeah, just 4:20.
Something super like
specifically 4:20, because you have to be high
exactly.
think this is a good place to hide a chip.
But no, that's something that I was just thinking about just now. We brought up Skrulls earlier, but there is a chance that, you know, Laura could be a Kree, because in the Marvel universe there are pink skinned Krees that just look like regular Just white people.
Like Jude Law. They look like
Jude Law. And so, you know, and they did mention a Kree splinter cell in Far From Home, like a secret cell.
Right.
So what if that's Clint's family? Like, what if it's like technically like, oh, that's a Kree cell. But, you know, we're just going to leave it be.
Whoa.
You
know, that'd be crazy. I mean, what I would love in Secret Invasion, I don't know if they're going to do that. They may just make it human versus, like, corrupt humans versus non-corrupt Skrull, and then other corrupt Skrull ruining it for everybody. I think that's going to be the conflict of Secret Invasion. But, man, I would love it if Secret Invasion is, like, a shadow war between Kree and Skrull on Earth that no one knows is going on. But it's kind of like Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows, right? You had your wizard war going on, and then muggles were just caught in the crossfire. Like, why do trees keep exploding? I don't understand. Why is the wibbly wobbly collapsing? I don't understand what's happening.
It makes sense because the Kree-Skrull war in the comics was essentially that. Like, they were just running amok and, like, sort of just putting their war on other people's turf, like, on Earth and stuff. So, like, we could see that.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I just don't think the MCU has, well, I guess they haven't really properly introduced the Skrulls' objectives. Because they, you know, it was, all came from Captain Marvel. And Captain Marvel just had so many other narrative priorities than really introducing the backdrop of the intergalactic conflict. Arguably, the MCU hasn't been able to really focus on that in anything. I mean, James Gunn has done a lot in Guardians of the Galaxy to introduce the Kree and their conflict with Ronan, who's just like a separate zealot. And basically, it was all on Glenn Close to just explain, Krees are assholes. You know, from that, we got our sense of who the Kree are. But yeah, I'm curious to see more of this intergalactic military narrative. You know, I'd love to see, you know, a Fellowship of the Ring prologue that just gives us a sense of who the different military commanders are, what the past wars were like. Give me a whole series on that. Just give me a whole scene.
Why wasn't that in the Bishop files? Why it was Bishop security files?
Yeah, I mean, I get that's a huge budget, but you know what else was a huge budget sequence? Arishem explaining the origin of Earth and Eternals. And I think most Marvel fans would be like, I'd rather know what happened between the Kree and the Skrull than how Arishem decided to supplant dinosaurs with humans.
Hey, who wants to see the land before time?
With Arishem. I like that whole sequence. I just think most people kind of went over their heads. Hey, what a great time to be alive, to have all these questions, to have the MCU expanded in all these different directions, and to have no freaking idea what's going to happen in episode 5.
Week by week, Marvel releases are so good. So good.
It's such a cool way to experience this, because it's like heartbreaking sometimes. It's frustrating as hell to not have all the answers, but to have like another, just to be able to look ahead 6 days from now and another huge chunk of MCU lore is going to be in our lives. Mm-hmm. Like, I much prefer that. Plus, we also get movies. It's not like it replaces movies.
And there's no bigger chunk of MCU lore than the Kingpin. He's a big chunk of MCU lore.
Right. The biggest chunk.
The biggest chunk.
Well, we'll get to him. We're going to talk more about Yelena and Val and Jack, all these characters. But first, Mack Weldon is one of our sponsors this episode, and we thank them. With the holidays here, you might be asking yourself, what do I wear to a non-ugly sweater party? Well, Mack Weldon has the answer. Whether it's an office party, a party with family and friends, or just a holiday TV binge session, Mack Weldon has all the essentials to keep you stylish and comfortable throughout the season. Their innovative daily wear system takes the hard work out of outfit planning with pieces designed to work together for any occasion. Mack Weldon's Ace sweatshirts and sweatpants and warm knit collection are perfect for your holiday routine and for gifts. They're super comfortable for any activity and make for a very thoughtful gift. And when I say comfortable, I mean it. They feel incredible on your body. They look sharp. And Mack Weldon's warm knit collections features shirts, vests, pajama pants, and more to keep the chill at bay on cold days. This holiday season, every guy deserves to wear unforgettable clothes that he loves for the moment moments with loved ones that he'll never forget. For 20% off your first order, visit macweldon.com/marvel and enter the promo code Marvel. That's macweldon.com/marvel, promo code Marvel for 20% off Mack Weldon. Get it right this holiday season. Also, thanks to Blue Chew for sponsoring this episode. Guys, there's nothing sexier than confidence, and Blue Chew can help give you the confidence where it counts. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready for whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. But the best part, it's all done online, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped direct to your door in a discreet package. So if you could benefit from some extra confidence when it's time to perform, Blue Chew can help. We've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code InsideMarvel at checkout. Just pay the $5 in shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code InsideMarvel to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the show. Also, we want to thank Aura Frames for sponsoring this episode. All your loved ones really want for the holidays is to see you. If schedules or distance get in the way of getting together, make their wish come true with an Aura Smart Frame. Thoughtfully crafted and easy to set up, an Aura Frame keeps you close to the people who matter most, making it easy to share photos, and now video too, from anywhere around the world using the Aura app. No wonder Oprah added it to her favorite things for a third year in 2021. It's easy to preload photos, and you can even reach out to other family members to contribute. Aunt Mary is always taking her photos, and you can finally put them to good use. Beautifully wrapped and ready to gift, any Aura Frame can be personalized with cherished memories and delivered right to their door for an easy, last-minute gift that will warm their heart and help you stay connected all year long. Last year, Aura Frames completely sold out, so don't wait. Visit AuraFrames.com and get gifting now. That's A-U-R-A Frames.com. Use code Marvel to take $30 off Aura's best-selling digital picture frames. And thank you to Shudder for sponsoring this episode. Scary movies are always in season, and with Shudder, you can stream great thrillers, horror, and suspense for $5.99 a month. Shudder is a Netflix of horror and has the largest, fastest-growing, curated selection of thrilling and dangerous entertainment. Stream on all your favorite devices. They have a lot of exclusive content, including some really great documentary series like Cursed Films and Behind the Monsters, and a horror-themed drag competition series. And they've got a ton of new Rockstar staff favorites, including Train to Busan. I love that film so much.
So good!
They also have Halloween, Day of the Dead, all your favorite horror movies. And they've got some new stuff, the classics and foreign films, you name it, everything. And you won't run out of interesting things to watch. So get started streaming the best horror, thriller, and supernatural content. Shudder's expertly curated collection includes must-see titles like Vicious Fun, The Mortuary Collection, and PG Psycho Goreman, plus all the best horror documentaries and the hit Creepshow TV series from executive producer Greg Nicotero of The Walking Dead. So to try Shudder for free for 30 days, go to Shudder.com and use the promo code Marvel. That's Shudder.com and promo code Marvel for 30 days free. All right, MT, why the hawk was Yelena hired to kill Clint Barton? Could Eleanor also be working with Val?
I think there's a good chance there. I think that Eleanor and Val could be in links together. And I think this is a wild theory. This is a bit of a rogue theory, but I've been saying it for a while. I really just think the Intellihensia is in play. If for those who don't know who the Intellihensia is, they're this group of like super smart supervillains in Marvel that assemble to like sort of like manipulate things in the shadows and like, you know, try to change the world with their smart way. And they were teased in Age of Ultron with a Claw. There's a little piece of paper that's like, and Claw worked with the Intellihensia. So I think that we're finally seeing who the Intellihensia is in the MCU. And they're just trying to get rid of Clint for his involvement as Ronin and, like, you know, getting involved with all these criminal organizations and ruining their plans that they were carefully planning in the shadows. So this is probably an extension of that, I feel. And, like, Eleanor's powerful friends are these Intellihensia people of just evil, smart people, which is, like, you know, your MODOK. I think Egghead, eventually. Val, Zemo, maybe down the line. He's super smart, so they might recruit him. Val seemed pretty impressed with Zemo by the end of Falcon and Winter Soldier. So I think that this is like the secret group in the shadows working here. But what do you think?
I mean, other than MODOK, that group sounds lame.
Like, I know there's other people. I'm blanking on
Elias Starr coming back. But I don't want there to be like a specter of the Marvel universe with just like the lamest villains that they can get to come back. Like if the Intelligentsia comes into the fold,
I think Doom might be in it too, dude. Cool.
Right. If it's Doom, if it's MODOK, yeah, now I'm interested. But like Vera Farmiga playing a version of Madame Mask, like fine. But I think what this tells us is I don't think you're wrong in that there is some kind of there's a text chain between bad actors and the MCU, at the very least. And I think what this tells us is that the reason that Val gave to Yelena to target Clint, that, oh, wouldn't you like a shot at the person responsible for your sister's death? That may be the reason that Val told Yelena to motivate her, but I don't think that is Val's reason to want Clint Barton dead. I think she may have her own reasons. And now it forces us to ask, when did that Black Widow post-credit scene take place? They deliberately showed it in colder weather. And I am wondering if that scene could have taken place during episode 4 of Hawkeye. And then so Val then made the decision based off of Eleanor's request to put the hit out on Clint Barton and turn to her deadliest assassin. Deadliest in quotes, because she has a widow's bite that is shitty, that does not work at all.
More like a widow's nibble, really. Not really a bite.
Widow nibble. But I think that it tells us something about Val. I think we already kind of suspected that Val had some corrupt intentions. The fact that she wants to work with John Walker, the fact that she seems so shady in the way that she approaches Yelena.
Bro, do you think we'll see John Walker in this?
I think we'll figure out more about what John Walker is a part of. Like, I think by the end of this show, we may get some hint that we may hear the word Thunderbolts or something like that. You know,
I hope so.
I don't know what word they're going to use, but there's going to be something to where some vague noun, common noun is used. And then on Inside Marvel, we'll be like, she's talking about the Dark Avengers or she's talking about Thunderbolts. So we might get some answers. Yeah, but I think the implication of Kate Bishop finding that list of names in Maya Lopez's apartment, it suggests that Yelena is working with Maya, or maybe has like made a deal with her or something like that. They have something in common. But remember, Yelena knows that Clint Barton is the Ronin based off of that photo that Val showed her. So Maya may already know that information now too. And that's why Maya has that list. Yelena just told her, she showed her that photo. Look, the hood is down, but this is the Ronin costume. And so now Maya is like, all right, I'm going to find every possible way I can get at Clint Barton, find all of his vulnerabilities. That was interesting. They had the ages of the first two kids, but not the age of Nate, which I just thought was interesting. Like she's still
maybe
working
that data
on
was pre, pre Nate's birth. And like they knew about his first two kids, but they didn't know about Nathaniel. That's really interesting.
Do you think that information was derived from the watch or given to Maya from Yelena? Did Yelena write that list or Maya? I have to assume Maya wrote that list, right? Because
Maya wrote the list, but she got the information from somebody else who may have known Clint before his last son's birth. So just someone that maybe him and Laura knew before Nathaniel's birth. From their past.
Mm-hmm. They strike me as a group of people who don't have a lot of family friends.
Like, yeah, but I just have this weird feeling that like Clint and his wife were spies together, and they probably have another spy friend that they worked with at some point, like at least one person.
Natasha, maybe?
And he's like giving up this, spilling the beans because he doesn't like them anymore. He's like, yeah, here's Clint's family.
I don't know. I think if they got it from anyone, they just got it from Yelena. I think that's the easiest approach there, but I'm just not really sure if Maya already knows that Clint is the Ronin. It's just interesting the way this show is like withholding secrets from other characters, but then just seems to let that information just fizzle out as opposed to like making that a big revelation. That's the best thing in storytelling when the audience knows more than certain characters do. So that way you can use that as a wedge point of conflict. So that's why I was surprised, I'll say, when Laura Barton just kind of spilled, someone behind the scenes off screen told her that Jack Duquesne is the CEO of Sloan Limited. Like, that's information that you can use to like twist things. But maybe they just decided like the audience at this point fully knows that Jack Duquesne is bad news. But that actually makes me want to ask you, MT, next question, is Jack Duquesne full of jack shit? Because what's going on with this guy? What's going on with this guy? Why did he want the Ronin sword so badly? Did he actually kill Armand? Mm. And could he actually just be a nice guy red herring? I think ultimately he is still going to be a bad guy. He's just not going to be the ultimate bad guy.
Huh. I don't think so. I think that Jack Duquesne is literally going to be a Marvel hero. This is what they're setting up. He's basically the Yelena of this show. He's like, hey, I'm here. You're going to see me do some cool stuff. And then I'm just going to leave with my swords by the end of this. And like, I'll pop up somewhere else. I just think that he's just like this really adorable guy. And like, we see that Kate's starting to like him more as a person as she gets to know him. Eventually, she's going to find out that her mom's a terrible person. And so she's going to, you know, at the end of this, she's probably going to hate her mom and sort of like Jack more. Because, like, Jack's just he's just a really like, eccentric guy. He's just like, all right, I just want to have fun and collect swords. So I don't think that he's an evil person. I think that he's probably tied to things that he doesn't fully understand because he's just a sword guy.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I don't think Jack Duquesne has been a particularly well-written character on this show. Mm. We're getting real. We're spilling the tea now. I like Tony Dalton. Overall, I think the writing on the show has actually been pretty good. Mm. But I think right now they're clearly setting something up. But if they're trying to hide something about Jack Duquesne, they're doing a very poor job hiding it. But they're trying to make him a more fun, you know, Knives Out, wear his villainy on his sleeves, mystery character. He's not that entertaining either. Tony Dalton is fascinating to watch in shows like Better Call Saul. That guy knows how to do so much with so little dialogue. But they invented this goofy sub game for him where he mispronounces certain aphorisms, which feels like vaguely problematic, right? Yeah, I'm not going to get into that, but it's like just problematic from a character development standpoint. Like, it just makes him into like a Pickles cartoon comic strip character. And if I look at him the way Sharon Carter was written in Falcon Winter Soldier, and we had all these different theories. Everyone has like a different take on Jack Duquesne. Like, oh, is he actually a spy working for the government who is going to arrest Eleanor at the end of this? Is he actually a bad guy? Is he Uncle? And I think ultimately we have to learn our lessons from the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And the clues that the show is giving us, let's just for now interpret them the way the show is giving it to us, that he clearly is meant to be suspected. But like, they have said explicitly that he works for a big guy. There is still someone at the top of all this who is not Jack Duquesne. I don't think Jack Duquesne was another Ronin identity. I liked that theory last week. After this week, I don't think that's the case. I think the reason why everyone has their own pocket theory for Jack Duquesne is because he is not being well written on this show. And he's kind of a mess of a character. I might change my tune next week, but these first four episodes, he has been all over the place. And I want to make something clear. With all mystery shows, you are supposed to be withheld information. You're not supposed to know everything about a character, about their intentions. That's what makes mysteries fun. But right now, there is a distinction between mystery and confusion. And I think there's straight up confusion about what we're supposed to feel when Jack is on screen. I thought it was so weird how Kate suddenly flipped her opinion on Jack just based off of this creepy thing of them dancing in a room while he's singing. Like, you are willing to overlook everything that you know and suspect about this guy. And just because your mom laughs, that's enough for you? And then in the next scene, Clint says, oh, actually, no, he is the CEO of Sloan Limited. This guy's corrupt. It seems even like Haley Steinfeld is confused how to interpret that information the way it's delivered. So I just think this character's all over the map. I'm not crazy about the way the character's been written, and I'm not going to get lured into crazy rabbit hole fan theories about Jack Duquesne. I'm just going to watch
it. I am on the opposite train here. I love Jack. I think that Jack, they're setting him up to be this really adorable character. But yeah, at this point, you know, he is sort of confusing in terms of his intentions and like what's really going on with Jack and how he's being written. But I think that by the end of this series, hopefully anyway, there'll be a payoff to like as to why he was presented that way. But like, I honestly feel like Jack has a lot of potential in the MCU.
I hope you're right. I'll say that, MT. I hope you're right.
Fingers crossed. Let this be a capsule.
And for all of you watching right now who may be like, why is Eric being too hard on the show? Look, this is just how we interpret shows. We're allowed to have like frustration moment to moment throughout the show. I'm not going to write off this whole show. I'm loving this whole show right now. I'm just saying certain characters can frustrate me at certain times. And I think it is right on us to hold them to a higher standard of scrutiny because that's how we appreciate when these shows are good. Anyway, I wanted to ask you, I think a very interesting moment into this episode was when Kate decided to not shoot Yelena just based off of Yelena shaking her head. What do you think that was about?
Well, I think the real answer is Kate just knew Yelena was about that life, and she just didn't want to test that. I think this all has to do with Kate not really being prepared for the hero life, because, you know, obviously, you know, she did all that, you know, crazy stuff with the tracksuits and all that stuff. But when it's, she had the choice to kill Yelena, like headshot or try anyway. And she was just like, I don't know if I can. And like, this is sort of what Clint was sort of getting at, in this episode. It's like, this life is not for you. And like, obviously he's motivated by Eleanor's comments to leave her out of it. But I just think that she's going to see the more gruesome parts of being a hero, the more Ronin-y type parts that, you know, Clint wants her to stay away from and just be a kid. So I think that could be Kate's motivations there. But how about you? What do you think?
See, I think she was in that moment trying to learn from Clint when he said the most important shot he ever took was the one he didn't take. She saw her Black Widow potential partner and friend in that moment. She saw a connection. There was that moment where Florence Pugh did such a good job, I think, just non-verbally saying, this isn't worth it. There's something more here. She kind of represented a mystery box to Kate Bishop, exactly, and she wanted to learn more before she just killed this person. There clearly is an important story here. And I think she wanted to hear her out and give her a chance. Clint said there was just something in Natasha that he saw she wants out of this. And I think Kate saw the same thing in Yelena in that moment. I thought it was a pretty beautiful moment where Kate kind of became the Hawkeye that she thinks Clint wants her to be.
Oh yeah, no, that's a spot on analysis of that moment. Because like, just a perfect reference to what he said before. Because Kate's going to be the new Hawkeye and Yelena's going to be the new Black Widow. That's sort of what they're setting up here. It's like, I'm going to not take the shot too, because we're the legacy characters. We're taking over and like, right, we got to do the same thing symbolically.
All right. As we look ahead to episode 5, we have been told that episode 5 is going to be a game changer.
So,
I think we need to be on Kingpin watch. Are we for sure going to see Vincent D'Onofrio, Wilson Fisk show up in Hawkeye next episode, MT?
Nope, because it's going to be the aerospace engineer. I cannot wait to see them once again. They're running the whole show. It's going to be amazing to see this amazing review. It's going to be the aerospace engineer and Paul Bettany work... and Paul Bettany's White Vision just working together.
What a weird moment in WandaVision that was. They set up, like, I know an aerospace engineer. And it was just like her Air Force friend in the woods.
Right, and like the cinematography when she teased it, it was like, oh, this is going to be a big deal. But then it was like, all right, just some girl. I'm like, all right, cool. Thanks for the van, I guess. But I think that Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin is for sure going to at least be teased or referenced. He's going to probably show up at the end like, it's me, it's Kingpin, I'll see you in episode 6. So yeah, if he's not in this, I'd be very shocked.
I agree. I think there was some confusion this episode where Clint was talking to Laura and she was like, so he's running Sloan Limited, he's the head of it. And he goes, Jack CEO? So he's laundering money for the big guy? And I think the he of that sentence was confusing. Is he talking about Laura's source? Or is he talking about Jack laundering money for a big guy over him? I think the latter is the case. I think Jack is the one who's laundering money for some other big guy. And later, Clint tells Kazee, you know what Maya's boss wants. You know what he's done to get it. He doesn't like this attention, that's for sure. I think he just would use the term Jack if, like, he was trying to get... I think clearly there's some kind of unnamed boss as of yet.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's who's going to get revealed. I mean, it's very clearly Vincent D'Onofrio's chuckle last episode. The fact that he was wearing this fine suit, the fact that his footsteps were heavy, I don't think it's that crazy to expect to see Kingpin show up in Hawkeye. But if you didn't know any of these clues, I still would say watching this episode, just as a casual viewer, you wouldn't sense that this is going to be a show where Kingpin shows up in. Like, you have to kind of know what the comics are about. This does, like, we didn't see the tracksuits other than Kazee this episode, and I guess other than Maya. But, like, the show kind of, this episode took a step away from the organized crime element of it. You learned more about Sloan Limited, but there was, like, it was more about Clint and Kate's Christmas relationship.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why the episode was called Partners, am I right?
But I think the reason this may have felt like a bit of a filler episode to some viewers is I think they are kind of timing this out and pacing it so that the week where we find out whoever Uncle is going to be the week where Spider-Man No Way Home drops. And we just learned that, you know, Charlie Cox is confirmed to be Daredevil at some point in the MCU. But I think that tells us we might see a Charlie Cox, Matt Murdock in Spider-Man No Way Home. Sure. And if he is in the universe, potentially everyone from the Defenders side of the universe can now be in the main MCU. And the other big player, other than, you know, arguably Jessica Jones, Jon Bernthal as Punisher, Frank Castle, Luke Cage, really D'Onofrio as Kingpin is the next most recognizable character after Charlie Cox's Daredevil, or at least the most recognizable villain.
And Turk Barrett, obviously.
Yeah. So, of course, how could I forget? So, yeah, I think that's what we can expect. There was even talk that we might see a new No Way Home trailer on the 15th. Which would be the day before the release in the U.S., the day of the release in the U.K., which I think would be so weird. Why would we see a No Way Home trailer that day unless it is going to reveal some information that comes out on the Hawkeye Episode 5 that comes out on the 15th? I'm probably thinking too hard about that.
No, I don't think that you're thinking too hard about this at all because, like, it makes sense. The timing is a little bit too suspicious. Because we do have these Daredevil elements in Hawkeye and we have those Daredevil elements rumored for Spider-Man. It would be weird and like very just silly of Marvel to not take advantage of these two things and like line them up perfectly. So I think you're exactly right on the money there. I think we're going to get a huge Daredevil week next week with, you know, Hawkeye and Spider-Man. And like that diner scene that was rumored is probably Daredevil. Like, I think you said it in the past episode, like you brought that up. And yeah, I was like, oh my God, you're
table.
Probably right. I think as we learned more and more so far, we're probably going to see Daredevil talking to Spider-Man in that diner.
Well, we will see. That is it for this episode of Inside Marvel. We're going to be back next week with a reaction to the world-breaking Episode 5.
Airspace Engineer!
I want to let everyone know, I'm still really, really loving Hawkeye. I have gripes about little components of it, but who knows how I'll feel next week and after Episode 6, but this is just how we are working through the show. We don't always get every part of the journey as we're on the journey, but at the end of the journey, we can look back and truly assess it. So don't get on me for being hard on this show. We should all be hard on everything that we watch and have hards on for everything we watch.
Hards on? Blue
General, what the hell am I saying? Anyway, well, don't forget to check out our many great merch options at newrockstarsmerch.com. Follow me at EA Voss. Follow MT at Mastertainment. Follow New Rockstars. Subscribe to Inside Marvel wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for watching. We're going to close with our favorite moment this episode.